This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Eek. Malaysia has imposed the movement control order and universities and tertiary institutions will be affected as well. They will be shut for 2 weeks starting today. So on the Mind Matter series today, I have on the line, as always, Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center. And we just like to sort of briefly explore the impact of these current developments on the mental health of students in university, of the youths, as well as sort of explore a little more broadly about other mental health challenges that young people are facing today. How are you, Dr. Amir?
Good. How are you, Sherry?
We are coping. I think it's just important to go on as we can, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unprecedented times, but I think you know, we've got to do what's got to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, here I am with all of you today again.
And we hear a lot about, you know, amidst what seems like very alarming, you know, developments, we are also hearing a lot of people saying, well, don't panic, you know, don't go out and panic buy, don't hoard. So there's a lot there, I mean, emotionally, that I guess people are going through, the fear and the anxiety. And we just like to try to understand that from a young person's perspective, I think. You know, just looking back at the last few weeks as well, how has this COVID-19 outbreak affected students, particularly from the perspective of their mental and emotional well-being?
To be fair, Michelle, at the moment, I think we're really at that first stage, you know, of any disaster, that's mm-hmm. what to use, where there's still a little bit of a shock and the mental health impact, which often comes a little bit later, hasn't really set in.
Oh,
I think what's really important at the moment is very good leadership mm-hmm. And also very good communication. I think the main issue that has created a bit of anxiety among not only students, but among Malaysians in general, is the lack or the difficulty in finding adequate information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the initial stages of our war, if that's the word to use, with COVID-19, there was a little bit more information, and that sort of stopped for a little while due to many reasons,
mm-hmm.
and now it's come back again. But I think it's really important for us to have that kind of good communication delivery, whether it's within the Malaysian sphere or within the universities, which is vital in reducing anxiety and fear,
mm-hmm.
and eventually, as you rightly mentioned, not only panic buying, but just panic actions in general, you know, hoarding mm-hmm. behavior or not wanting to do certain tasks. You know, there's that sense of defeat or almost like helplessness, because we don't know what's going to happen or what's actually to be anticipated. And I think that needs to be alleviated by adequate information. Now, once we've gone through this phase, as we've seen in other countries as well, be it mainly China, because they've been longest in this particular episode,
mm-hmm.
then the mental health consequences will happen.
Mm.
And we're seeing a lot of issues over there on things like loneliness, social isolation, depression and anxiety creeping in, particularly mm-hmm. after a certain threshold. But we're not there yet. And personally, I really hope, as I've been tweeting, that we never get to that stage, that, you know, whatever has been decided by the government at this point of time will hopefully be able to, you know, prevent us from actually reaching that stage by flattening that curve. You know, the one that Dr. Zhou keeps on talking about,
mm-hmm.
the one that everybody keeps on talking about, flattening that curve. We've got to flatten that curve so that we don't have a situation where, you know, we will all be, you know, in a situation of, let's say, lockdown, the proper lockdown,
mm-hmm.
and then developing all these mental health consequences, no mm-hmm. matter which part of Malaysia that we're in.
Mm. And what are the signs that would indicate that, you know, collectively as a community, we may be tipping over to that point, you know, with the loneliness and the isolation and all that?
Yeah, so again, we're really trying to ensure that we don't get there, but it's going to be the usual. I mean, we're seeing a little bit of it starting to creep in because the information has been a little bit hard to get at times, and sometimes have been conflicted. That's the other thing. We need to make sure that the information is consistent throughout the time. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a little bit of that, of people being a little bit more anxious, you know, putting words out there, almost like a doomsday sort of wording in, you know, their, for example, social media.
Yeah.
You can also hear that a little bit among the corridors, you know, where people are talking about what happens next, you know, what are we going to do now? You
mm-hmm.
know, these are just signs of people starting to develop some level of stress and distress.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't alleviate these concerns, then eventually some of them who might have risks, as we've always discussed before, not everybody will have this problem, but there'll be some people that will have this problem or might get this problem that will be triggered from this particular incident. You know, among people with mental health issues, I'm seeing this already. I'm pretty sure my colleagues are seeing people with anxiety starting to, you know, start to develop a little bit more anxiety than they would.
Mm.
You know, I've seen two people who are on the verge of psychosis have started to have signs of psychosis related to this COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these kind of issues that happens in the community does affect our patients as well, but not everybody gets it. It's just mm-hmm. that we just need to maintain and manage it as much as we can. So there's going to be two sort of people out there, the ones that are at risk and the ones that most of us who are not at risk.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't mitigate the situation, then, you know, this eventually might be a problem. But like I said, I'm hoping that we never get there. I'm hoping that the 2 weeks partial movement restriction, if we all follow that order well, and this is really important for, you know, students. You know, if you can stay at your hostel, you know, I know that universities are closed, but we've given you a lot of work. Don't trust me, all the universities that I'm aware of have been giving them online work. So you should be actually, you know, isolating yourself in your place. Because if you look at the data that's come out from Ministry of Health as well, this is very important, that the Selangor and KL, unfortunately, are a little bit overrepresented with cases.
Mm-hmm.
But other parts of Malaysia, I know there's some places like Sabah and Johor that have got a little bit more people, about 50 people or so that's positive. But the rest of Malaysia is pretty much quite low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're worried that, you know, once people think that they can go back home, then they might be spreaders, right? They might be people who can actually spread this this particular virus to other people that have not been touched by it yet. So, you know, what we want you to do is literally have like a pause where everybody just stays put in where they are and restrict as much as they can the movement. So students should be in the universities, maybe, you know, in their hostels, just doing their thing
mm-hmm.
without having to move around and congregating. Make sure that you've got your social distancing or physical distancing by about a meter and a half, you know, just to make sure that you don't, you know, accidentally infect somebody if you are infected, you didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And just make sure that mom and dads also don't ask your children to come home if they don't have to.
Mm.
You know, make sure that they just stay put for the next 2 weeks so we can actually, like I said, flatten that curve. Because what's happening now is that colleagues on the front line are actually getting quite tired. You know, I'm hearing a lot of voices and sounds from my colleagues that they're really tired, and I think we need to give them a break.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, hopefully halt that virus from actually spreading around the country.
Yep. Just want to pick up on that one thread about, you know, that students, you know, just sort of stay put, right? Don't congregate as well. But let's talk a little bit about the nature, I guess, of young people and the need to be part of social circles. How's this going to affect the way that they're able to cope? And if they are going through some sort of issues, anxieties perhaps, and they need to reach out, what channels are available for them?
Yeah, so this is quite important again, too, because the medical facilities, whether they're in the universities or other universities, are still running and operational.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in our center in University of Malaya, the hospital is still functional.
Mm-hmm.
So these students who might have issues can actually make their way there to find help. Now, as of today, as we're having a chat now, we're still discussing about which facilities in the university will be running. You know, counseling mm-hmm. services are available as well in university. I'm not so sure how they're running in most of the other universities. I'm waiting for instruction from my own.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely in terms of the Department of Psychiatry, for example, of our hospital for our students, You know, it's available for those who might need that help. But again, you know, we're not in a total lockdown. So it is a situation where we're sort of at the early stage. Like I said, we probably won't feel much of it over the next probably week and a half, maybe up to two if we, you know, if we're able to go back to normality again. It's what happens after that. And I think we've got to have a plan in terms of, you know, mental health plan. What happens if these things progress? Because that's what's happening overseas as well. A lot of discussions really happening once they've reached a certain period of time. And then, you know, there is that prolonged, almost like dire situation where people are unable to connect. Now, the good thing about our students is that they're probably better than us in terms of, you know, social interactions without meeting people.
Yes, that's
true. That's the way to use. You know, so, you know, again, we're not saying isolate yourself like an island. We're just saying physically distance yourself so that you don't spread the virus, which is a droplet. But you can still call your friends. You know, I'm calling you right now. We're, you know, we're having this particular conversation here. You can actually connect with your colleagues and friends through other social media apps. You can actually still Zoom them and Skype them as well. It's just that we want you to socially or physically distance yourself from each other so that, you know, that period of spread becomes lesser and lesser, and hopefully it'll just die down. And as we've seen in other countries, once that is done, in an extreme sense of things, then you will get that flattening of the curve. And that's really important. But at the same time, we need to be, as you've rightly mentioned, cognizant that the fact that some people will struggle. And for those who might struggle, we need to make sure that help is available for them when they need that help. So I'm personally hoping as well that people like Befrienders, you know, they're a volunteer group. They're not really health, but I consider them to be health, and they should be allowed to function as per usual, because I'm pretty sure that come the second week or so, there'll be lots of people calling in, because especially if they really followed the social isolation or social distancing to its extreme really well, which I would commend them on that, but they will start to feeling a bit of the struggle because of that, you know, the difficulty that they're having with that particular activity that they're doing.
Okay. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center. He's speaking to me on the phone, and we're talking about the impact of the COVID-19 outbreak on basically everyone's mental health, actually, how we're bearing up and how we need to sort of hang in there for, well, the medium term haul, not perhaps we don't know yet whether it'll be the long haul. But Dr. Amir, you did also mention we need some sort of mental health plan if we're in it for the long haul. And that's something that I want to get to when we come back from this short break. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. On the line with me is Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center. We're discussing the COVID-19 outbreak, of course. That seems to be the only thing that everyone is talking about today. But we're looking at its impact on our mental health collectively as a society. We're trying to look at how it's impacting youths as well, university and college students who will be affected by the movement control order that states that universities and tertiary institutions will be shut for the next 2 weeks. Dr. Amir, you mentioned a mental health plan. Can you elaborate on what that would look like if we're talking about after these 2 weeks?
Well, again, it'll be almost a little bit like a disaster plan at that point, where people will be doing psychological first aid. But even before that, I think that a lot of us here can actually maintain good mental health if we have an early plan. I think that's quite important. Yes, at the moment, most of the issues will be related to the acute phase. You know, for those who are affected physically, what can we do to help them? For colleagues on the field, particularly, you know, how can we assist them in actually either doing health awareness or actually volunteering to go down on the ground and becoming a frontliner? Because you have to imagine, we've been fighting this for, I think, about a month now, if I'm not mistaken. It's not a little bit more than a month. So colleagues on the front line have actually gone through probably a cycle or two of, you know, having to be there daily and then suddenly, you know, having some break and then come back again. You know, even in my hospital, you know, some of us have been asked to help out in the emergency department. And, and this is happening across the globe because, like in Italy, people that were retired apparently are called back to assist if they can or able to you know, the front line or at least in the medical system over there. So these are what's going to happen in the first stage. But for most of us here, I mean, we've got to be prepared. We've got to be ready in order to, you know, prevent mental health issues from coming to us. One of the issues with having these restricted movement, if you really follow it very well, i.e. most of us here are probably not going to be going to our work. So we're working from home. And some of us here might not be comfortable or familiar with working from home. You know, we've got a routine that we actually get up in the morning and then we, you know, we get ready, we have our breakfast and then we're off. You know, for some of us here who stay in Kuala Lumpur where the distance might not be great but the traffic jam is much, much long, we'll be up early and then we'll be off quite early to reach work at a certain time. Now, now suddenly you're at home. And you wake up early and there's really no place to go, right? Yeah, I mean, you're still working from home for some of us, but you're not going anywhere. Your routine runs. So you've got to start preparing a little bit about what it's going to be like if the next 2 weeks extends. Like I said, we don't want it to extend. We're hoping that these 2 weeks will be able to assist. But we don't, like you said, we don't know. But what we do know is that, you know, if everybody follows the plan, God willing, we'll get there. But, you know, if we don't get there, what is the plan next? So there's a few things that has been mentioned. You know, there's a really nice one that was talked about by Dr. Sue Varma in the U.S. Particularly, she was working, I think, on the 9/11 and then now the recent COVID-19 situation over there as well, where she talks about mindfulness, movement, mastery, and meaningful engagement. You know, having these four ideas in your mind might assist in reducing mental health difficulties. And I seem to agree with her. So mindfulness is a form of stress management therapy, which you can Google it up a little bit, which basically its focus is actually being mindful of the present. So this is really one of those particular psychotherapies or skills that is useful for trying to ground yourself to the present. Remember, the issue with what's happening right now is our fear and anxiety of the unknown. So getting to grips with a little bit about what is at present might be able to just sort of, you know, ground ourselves a little bit and then make it just a little bit more appealing or a bit more acceptable or manageable for ourselves. So that's the first thing. The second one is talk about movement, and that's more about making sure that, you know, being at home, working at home, or just staying in your place doesn't mean that you shouldn't exercise. We know that there are lots of videos out there on YouTube. You know, there's apps on doing exercises at home. And we know that exercise as an evidence-based form of treatment is helpful, particularly to ward off mild depression. And you need to have mild depression before you go to moderate and severe. So, you know, having a routine or a regime, and often they say about 120 minutes per week, what I often tell my patients is that at least about 20% increase in heart rate, you know, probably about 20 to 30 minutes a day, that's fine. Because, you know, people who have never exercised, and suddenly you ask them to exercise, it's just too much work. But if you start slowly, and, you know, there's a word, it's about regularity. It's not about, okay, this next 2 weeks, since I'm stuck, I'm going to do it, and then after that, I'm not going to do it anymore. No, it's about trying to find some kind of idea or plan that you are able to do it in a regular fashion, even if it's once a week. But I think what's most important is to start thinking about moving. Now, the third one they talk about is about mastery. And this is the way, the one that I always talk about, which is called self-care. So any activity that makes you have some level of pleasure that you enjoy doing is a self-care activity. You know, people talk about, you know, you being selfish. No, it's not about being selfish. We're trying to prevent a mental health crisis in you. And collectively, if every one of us does it, we're trying to prevent a mental health situation in the rest of the country in that general. So anything that you might enjoy, if you enjoy sports, you know, spend some time on that. If you enjoy arts, spend some time on that. If you enjoy writing or reading, spend time some time on that. Preferably something that has a bit more value. But again, you know, we often don't put a value to it per se. Like, you know, if you're watching television, that's a waste of time. Because this is a self-care activity. It's just that you need to probably limit yourself in some of those particular activities. But you need to have some activities, a hobby, you know, that it will, that's meaningful or useful for you. You know, for example, as you probably know, I like to do some writing and, you know, penmanship. You know, and I do like to play around with these kind of toys, and I'm just sharing, though, since we've got this time, it's really time for some of us here to be able to write or read, you know, when we've had a little bit of difficulty in the past. So again, putting a routine on doing things that you enjoy might also assist. And the fourth one, which is actually a meaningful engagement, mm-hmm. is to engage with people. Or to think about why you're doing what you're doing. For example, social distancing. Mm-hmm. If you think about it from the bigger picture, and I've been sharing this with people, what we're doing now is we're trying to prevent us from being like Italy and Spain, literally, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
We're all sacrificing our work. We're all sacrificing our autonomy to move around in a way.
Mm-hmm.
We're all sacrificing maybe our visitations to see our family members. You know, remember, this is a school holiday, so there's lots of kanduri kandaru, you know, activities are happening out there. So we're all sacrificing all this for the bigger goal of actually trying to flatten that curve.
Mm-hmm.
And why do we need to do that? It's because we want to actually all be safe together.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't, you know, so if you think about what you're doing, this the sacrifice that you're making for that bigger cause, that allows you to later on be, number one, committed to this activity.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, is also to ensure that what you're doing has value. And mm-hmm. as we know, you know, even at work, we want to find meaningful work. So the activities that we're doing need to have a sense of meaning that is beyond us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these four items have been shown to be helpful. Now, in the UK, they've added one, and I think this is really important as well. Once you don't have a routine, one of the ones that will often be affected is going to be sleep.
Mm.
Now, similarly with exercise, sleep is another activity that we know evidence-based assists in mood regulation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you don't have, you know, in long breaks, you know, when we're in high school or in university, you know, we might sleep really late and wake up really late, and then suddenly when it's time to go back to university, we try to regulate it again. And of course, we will have some trouble at that.
Yeah.
For some of us who have the, you know, the luxury of taking gap years, even at work, you might realize that when you've done a certain routine, once your sleep is off, or even on the weekends, you know, for some of us who go out on the weekends, say Friday, Saturdays, you really hit it hard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then, you know, you're really pretty useless and you're feeling quite bad on Sunday. And there comes a point in life that you say, look, this is just not worth it. I mean, I don't know whether you've reached that stage. I definitely know I have.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, this is not worth it. I'm not going to, it's okay, guys. I can't stay more than whatever, you know, 12
yeah.
o'clock, whatever.
Absolutely.
I just need to sleep. So making sure that we have a good sleep routine is also vital in preventing mental health situations. And the ones that often are going to be sensitive to sleep, as I shared with all my patients as well, is those of us who have a potential for a mood disorder.
Mm.
And you'll be able to feel it, you know. Your mood is just off. That's why I said that, you know, you come to a point where you decide that if I do this, tomorrow is going to be a bad day.
Mm.
So, you know, you've got to make a choice whether or not you're going to do this. So similarly, when we're in the situation right now, when we can make choices and we can actually plan how we're going to spend the next 2 weeks, making sure that we, you know, we sleep adequately at that, you know, whatever time that we normally do, is vital for us to ensure that we're getting the right, you know, kind of support.
Mm. My concern about what's going to happen, at least for the, you know, foreseeable 2 weeks ahead, if people are, you know, staying home as much as possible, following the restrictions, and at the same time they are looking for information, the first thing they're going to turn to is social media. And as you've said, you know, a lot of us are getting so stressed and distressed by what's being shared and what's being amplified in that echo chamber. And it really, the emotions there just spread like wildfire. Anything you can think of to specifically address
yep.
that phenomenon?
Yep. So again, one of the other advice that has been raised by the UK, which I've been also sharing with people, is, you know, if you don't have to be on social media, again, when we talk about social connections, it doesn't need to be social media. You know, like you can just call your friend. I want to call Shell Inc. It's mm-hmm. a one-on-one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to Zoom or Skype with, say, John. I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily need to be on social media per se, particularly if it starts getting a bit toxic or uncontrolled.
Mm-hmm.
And the advice is actually to stay away from social media if you feel it's going to start triggering you, or limit the time that you're going to be on it. Mm-hmm. But what's most important is that where do we find that vital information about the situation, which is now COVID-19, to be fair. That's the situation at hand, that is trustworthy, that is easily accessible. So, you know, I'm aware that in Telegram, if you're on Telegram, the CPRC, I don't know what it's called, but
the Crisis Preparedness and Response Center from the Ministry of Health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that one, they come out, there's actually a Telegram page there that just gives you the current information about the situation without all the other extra bits about people want to comment about whether it's a good thing or bad thing, the right thing or the wrong thing,
right,
which is where it starts getting irritating, actually. Because yes, you just want the information to be able to plan what you're going to do next, right? Mm-hmm. We wanted yesterday, for example, if you're watching television and you heard the press conference, all you wanted to know is what's the next plan. So now we know that the plan is restricting movement. We don't need to know about people's comment about whether they agree or don't agree on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to know what's the plan and what do we do next. And I think there was also provided a phone number where for some of us who might have businesses or might be in that gray zone, you know, whether you're supposed to be, whether you're a vital service and a non-vital service, whether you should be working or not. You know,
mm-hmm.
For example, to me, one of the gray zones would be, they say medical personnel, pharmacists. What about that distributor, the guy in between, you know?
Mm.
What if the hospital runs out of medication and the pharmacist can't provide it? What about that guy, the person who sends the treatment across to these two places?
Right.
Is that vital or not vital? So that guy is a gray zone, right? So I think these are the ones that can make the phone call and one answer to your question. You're not going to get people's opinion on whether that's the right answer or the wrong answer, which is the one that causes a lot of unnecessary anger,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it can actually lead to social distress or emotional distress, with regards to that. So
okay,
that's, I think, quite important. So we need to make sure that we get the right information at the right channel. So again, there's going to be websites. I'm pretty sure the Ministry of Health website is pretty updated.
Mm-hmm.
For the universities, for example, our website should be updated about what is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're going to be reading the physical newspaper, then again, you're going to get just, information as such. You won't get all the comments that comes in between. So
yeah,
these are some of the ways that you can get credible information without all the distressing, unnecessary noise that you might get through social media, which might be helpful for some people, particularly,
yeah,
that might be distressed by this.
Yeah. And, for students who are supposed to be doing their assignments in their homes or hostels for the next 2 weeks, I mean, what's going to happen in terms of sort of the daily basis? Is there a channel that lecturers can check in with them, that they can, you know, tap each other on the shoulder and just say, hey, is everything okay? That kind of thing?
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on the university, but I'm aware of, just before we had this conversation, I was just having a chat with one of my trainees or students in social preventive medicine. And he just shared with me a photo of him currently at this point of time doing online teaching with one of my colleagues on Zoom or Skype. I'm not sure what they use, but there's a whole bunch of them all on board. So not only are they learning about what they're supposed to be learning, but there's also that interaction, at least that you put a face to a voice, for example, and people are commenting in. So again, mm-hmm. technology has been able to allow us to have a little bit more interaction in terms of learning. And you probably know as well, you know, even if you do, say, for example, Skype meetings, we can actually comment in the bottom level there. So there's that level of interaction. Of course, it's not going to be face-to-face, but at least there's people commenting, say, hey, shall we? You know, I don't understand that part. Or then somebody else will chime in. And, you know, that's interaction that, again, creates that kind of part that which makes us human, actually, this human interaction,
yeah,
that is useful. And I think, you know, for all of us in the education system, you know, if we've been hard in trying to get people to push for e-learning, you know, for the use of technology for teaching and learning, this is really the period of time
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we're able to now, you know, show that these are the circumstances, I think, where e-learning becomes really, really useful, which was not an avenue that we had many years ago.
Mm. Do you have a final message for us, Dr. Amir?
Well, what I wanted to just share with everybody is, like I said, since we're all in this together, because we are all in this together, yeah?
Yeah.
Please take care of your physical health. You know, make sure that you do your social distancing. At the same time, make sure that you're also taking care of your mental health and your social well-being, because as we've always shared, health incorporates all three. So just being physical is not enough. You got to make sure that you have a mental health plan. And we've shared with you just now what Dr. Sue Varma had shared with her people.
Yep.
Basically, it was mindfulness, yep, movement, mastery, stroke, self-care, and again, having a meaningful engagement in what we're all doing. So we're all in this together to flatten that curve, mm-hmm, so that all of us will be healthy. And I think the last one is, if you're not good on social media, get out of it.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be quite vicious out there. People have too much time. You know, this is our problem now.
Yeah.
The other thing is, make sure that you have a sleeping plan well, and that you're socially connected. You don't have to be physically connected, but you're socially connected with those that you, that you know, your loved ones. So make sure you call mom and dad. You know, don't go home to see them if you're far away, because you don't want to be transmitting that virus from one state to another, but make sure you call them up, you know, Skype call them, Zoom call them, or FaceTime even, or even WhatsApp time.
Yeah.
But, you know, make sure that you're connected to them. And that hopefully, you know, will help all of us together within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, we hope that befrienders, for instance, will be able to continue their services to provide emotional support through telephone. So their number is 03-7956-8145. You know, just somebody there to listen to you if you need to talk. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Amir Sidik bin Amir Nordin, consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center, very kindly joining us on the line to discuss the impact of COVID-19 on our mental health and how we can face the next 2 weeks and be very mindful about our actions and our behaviours. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.